The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
So I would like to talk about generosity this morning, or the Pali word is dana. For those who don't know what Pali is the language that in which the teachings of the Buddha were written. And I've been told that in Pali, there are not very many nouns. It's mostly verbs. So you could think of this as a talk on giving, as a dynamic process, as opposed to the more static generosity. So when I was preparing to talk this morning, I always go to Access to Insight. People know what that is. If you don't know it and you're interested in things Buddhist, it's a great website, and you can Google any term, and it'll give you a collection of essays and teachings and whatever on whatever the topic is. A lot of what's in there are things that are written by somebody named Bhikkhu Bodhi, who is a contemporary translator, scholar, monk, wonderful person. And I found an essay in there entitled No Strings Attached, The Buddha's Culture of Generosity. And in that essay, he talks about the difficulty of dana, or generosity giving, in Western Buddhist communities, because it always seems kind of like a quid pro quo, you know, as though you're paying the teacher to give the teachings. And in fact, in the traditional way of doing things and in Buddhist countries, talks on dana or generosity are the teaching is given after the gift has been given, not before. So as he said, that there's the stain of hinting won't sully what's said. So I'm not hinting for more nickels in the Tana bowl afterwards. I just want to put that out there. I am talking about generosity because it has been a very interesting practice for me, and because it has made me profoundly happy. And my hope is that that will be your experience too. And it's a happiness that is a true happiness. It's not the happiness of going to the mall or whatever it is that you like to do. So the Buddha said this about happiness as it relates to generosity. If beings knew as I know the results of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would the stain of selfishness overcome their minds. Even if it were their last bite, their last mouthful, they would not eat without having shared if there were someone to receive their gift. So I think about this that sometimes when I'm hiding my chocolate bar in my purse or something so I don't have to offer it to somebody else. No. And if there were, I wouldn't tell you. Yeah, I was in a cab going to the airport in Chicago last weekend. It was a Somali driver. We were talking about the Somalis in Minneapolis. He was talking about living in Somalia. He hasn't been here in this country very long. We're driving along. He stops the car, rolls down the window. There's an old lady out on the side begging, and he just, you know, gives her some money. And I thought, okay, here's a man who grew up in this war-torn country where people are starving and have nothing. And it was, didn't even think about it. He just offered dana, generosity. So elsewhere, the Buddha says that to be in the position to give is itself a blessing. And I would imagine that all of us here, I'm guessing, are in a position to give something, if not material things, then the gift of our time. And certainly in this era of wealth disparity and income inequality, I think we can really understand what he's talking about here. To be in the position to be able to give is a true blessing. So generosity or dana is the first of the paramis, or what are called the spiritual perfections. And the paramis are all based on the wish of for the welfare of others. And you can think of them as being the qualities of a Buddha. And they're also, I like to think of them as the ways that we can practice just in daily life. So even though we may not spend a lot of time meditating or doing things like that, we can always practice these spiritual qualities as we go through our lives. And in fact, you know, in Asian countries where meditation, lengthy meditation and intensive practice is done primarily by monastic communities, it's the paramis, the spiritual perfections, that are practiced by lay people. So in this tradition, the Theravadan tradition of Buddhism, there are 10 paramis. And the first one is giving or generosity. The second is virtue. The third is renunciation. Fourth is wisdom, followed by energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. And I had to read those because I can't remember them in order. So the fact that dana or generosity or giving is the first of the paramis is significant. And it's listed as the first parami because it's considered to be one of the spiritual perfections that anyone can practice. You don't have to be a monastic. You don't have to be an advanced spiritual adept. Any one of us can practice generosity. And it is also considered to be the easiest to practice. In fact, one of Ajahn Chah, so Ajahn Chah was a Thai forest master teacher who has had quite a profound effect, influence on Theravadan Buddhism. And a monk in his lineage said that the Buddha talked about dana first because if someone didn't understand the value of basic generosity, they weren't teachable. I think I could agree with that. So as with everything Buddhist, examining our motivation when we give is crucial. It's all about motivation. We can't control the effect of our actions, but we can be clear about what motivates us to act. And it's motivation that determines the karmic effect of any action. So this deliberate choosing or this intention is one of the central teachings of the Buddha. And when he gave a discourse to his son, who was named Rahula, he advised him that he needed to think before, during, and after every action about his motivation. So that would be an interesting practice, wouldn't it? He said, "Is what I am about to do, am doing, or just did, for my benefit as well as for the benefit of all beings? And if the answer to that is no, then the action should not happen or we should stop doing it." So interesting, he talks about it being for our benefit. So he includes both, for our benefit and for the benefit of all beings. So while many of us think of generosity as being in terms of the benefit to the other, to the receiver, certainly that was the way that I was taught to be generous. It wasn't about me, it was about the person that I was giving to. He does ask us to consider our own benefit as well. And this benefit is related to our motivation. So are we giving because we think we should, because we should return a favor, because we're guilty, because that's how we were taught, so we do it kind of mindlessly? Or are we giving to support our own practice, our own process of awakening, and also to benefit others? So both are important. So in the Dana Sutta, so this is a teaching on generosity, the Buddha describes 6 possible motivations for being generous. And these are in ascending order. So the first one is the least important. The first one is giving to seek one's own profit. The second is giving because one believes giving is good. It's interesting. It's only number 2. third one is giving because one understands that one is better off than others. Also kind of surprising, to me anyways. Four, giving because other people one admires have given, so great figures in history or spiritual leaders or people that we know. Giving because it makes the mind serene and joyful is the fifth motivation. And the highest motivation to give is giving because it is, quote, an ornament for the mind, a support for the mind. This is the motivation when we give that bears the highest fruit or the greatest fruit in terms of our own awakening. So the next time we give or move to give, we might consider whether our motivation is aligned with our highest spiritual goal. And so in Buddhism, that would be Nibbana, or you can think of Nibbana or Nirvana as being a mind that's clear, a mind that's free of greed, anger, and delusion. And generosity is a practice that can actually help us to pure our mind stream if we're paying attention. Or it can result in greed, anger, and delusion, what are called the defilements. So these are the words of the Buddha again. As worldliness pursues getting, which is the root of greed and action, so giving is the way to nibbana. So I'll just tell a story on myself, a personal story about motivation and how that kind of informed me about what he's talking about here. So several years ago, I went to India and I bought this beautiful beaded shawl in Rajasthan, and I loved the shawl. And I was wearing it with a friend one day when I came back, and she said, "Oh, that's the most beautiful shawl." And so in my mind, I thought, okay, she really likes this shawl, therefore I should give it to her, even though I really loved this shawl. And so I gave it to her. And I don't think there's been a retreat since then that I haven't wished I had that shawl. That I think about that shawl, I wonder if she really appreciates it as much as I did, blah, blah, blah. And so that was kind of the gift that kept on giving, and what it's giving me is a lot of mental suffering. But it's also giving me a great gift, because I realized that I wasn't ready to give away that shawl. I gave it away because I had an idea that I should, and I really wasn't very connected to my heart, and so I wasn't giving it with this unencumbered heart. And so it's taught me to really pay attention very carefully before I impulsively do something that will result in my own suffering, really. I've learned a lot from it. I've learned to pay attention. And I've also learned about what it feels like to have a greedy mind, and also what it feels like to have acted impulsively. And had I paid attention, I probably perhaps could have been more generous towards myself and understood that I wasn't ready to do that. And I might also have felt the pain of not being ready. So there are lots of lessons that I learned from that. So as a spiritual practice, then dana or generosity is about learning both from the giving and from the not giving, and then discerning which supports our liberation. And in this case, the giving did not support my liberation. It does now, probably, but not then. So you might take time to reflect for yourself on times that you gave, when you gave from a motivation that perhaps wasn't in support of your awakening. So maybe we'll just spend a moment now so you could bring your awareness inside again and see if you can recall a time in your own experience when you gave, when you acted generously, or what you thought was generously, out of a motivation that actually didn't support your own awakening, that resulted in greed, anger, or delusion, or what would be called an unwholesome mind state, something that led to suffering. And as you recall that, you might notice how that feels now in the body mind as you think about that. thinking about it not with self-criticism or judgment, with harshness, thinking about it with a kind curiosity, with compassion towards yourself. How does it feel to recall that moment? So, presuming that we are clear about our motivation to give, what might we expect when we are generous? So this is, again, the words of the Buddha. In this world, monks, there are three things of value for one who gives. What are these things? Before giving, the mind of the giver is happy. While giving, the mind of the giver is made peaceful. After having given, the mind of the giver is uplifted. And in addition, he says, he, she, one who is generous is dear and charming to people at large. Furthermore, good people, people of integrity, admire one who is generous. Furthermore, the fine reputation of one who is generous, a master of giving, is spread far and wide. Furthermore, one who is generous approaches any assembly of people, noble warriors, Brahmins, householders, or contemplatives. He does so confidently and without embarrassment. Furthermore, at the breakup of the body after death, one who is generous reappears in a good destination, the heavenly world. So when we have given in a way that benefits ourselves and others, it's important to acknowledge and reflect on our good deeds. When we're recalling our own generosity, we're not caught in greed, anger, or delusion. It is impossible to reflect on generosity and also feel greedy at the same time. And when we do that, we're increasing the likelihood that we will be generous again in the future. So if you think about modern science, we are strengthening those mental circuits or those pathways in the brain that are associated with generosity. This is the Buddha again. You should develop this recollection of generosity while you are walking, while you are standing, while you are sitting, while you are lying down, while you are busy at work, while you are resting in your home crowded with children. I don't know if your home's crowded with children. But the point is, the Buddha is encouraging us to reflect on our own generosity. And again, I don't know what you were taught when you were growing up, but that's not something I was taught. I was taught that I should be generous, but that it was considered somewhat selfish to actually reflect on my own generosity. So I would invite you now to take a moment to bring your attention inward and to recall a time when you gave with an open heart, a time when you feel that you really benefited your own awakening as well as another. So calling to mind your own goodness and your own generosity. And really savoring that. Reflecting on our own goodness is the proximate cause of loving kindness, of caring. And noticing how it feels in your own body, mind now to reflect on your own goodness, on your own generosity. This is a practice that we can all do for ourselves and for the benefit of the world. So the Buddha said that generosity includes the giving of three things: material things, fearlessness, and the Dhamma. So material things could be external things. They could be clothing, food, what have you. Or they could be internal things, by which he meant limbs or organs. So if you haven't signed up to be an organ donor, here's your opportunity, if that's possible for you. Fearlessness, the giving of fearlessness, is giving protection to beings when they are frightened. And the giving of the Dhamma is providing instruction on the Dhamma or the teachings with an undefiled mind. So when we hear about others' generosity, whatever kind it may be, it can gladden our heart and inspire us. So I wanted to end with a story about the gift of fearlessness. You may have heard this story. At about 8:30 a.m. on Sunday, December 11, 2005, a crab fisherman working the open waters 18 miles off the coast of San Francisco spotted a whale that had become entangled in the nylon ropes that link crab pots. The whale, a female humpback about 45 to 50 feet in length and weighing an estimated 50 tons, had likely become snared while traversing the humpback's usual migratory route. A rescue team was hastily assembled, and by 2:30 p.m., divers had evaluated the situation and determined that the imperiled whale was so badly entangled in the crab pot lines that the only way to save her was to dive beneath the surface and cut the nylon ropes. As one of the rescue divers reported, "I was the first diver in the water, and my heart sank when I saw all the lines wrapped around it. I really didn't think we were going to be able to save it." The diver said about 20 crab pot ropes, which were 240 feet long with weights every 60 feet, were wrapped around the animal. Rope was wrapped at least four times around the tail, the back, and the left front flipper, and there was a line in the whale's mouth. The combined weight was pulling the whale downward, forcing it to struggle mightily to keep its blowhole out of the water. The crab pots were cinched so tight that the rope was digging into the animal's blubber. Four divers spent about an hour cutting the nylon ropes with a special curved knife, a risky undertaking since a single flip of the gargantuan mammal's tail could easily have killed any one of them. Eventually, they freed the humpback, a feat that the Marine Mammal Center described as the first successful attempt on the West Coast to free an entangled humpback. The divers told a San Francisco Chronicle reporter that the whale seemingly thanked them for its deliverance once the rescue operation was complete. When the whale realized it was free, it began swimming around in circles. It swam to each diver, nuzzled him, and then swam to the next one. It felt to me like it was thanking us, knowing it was free and that we had helped it. It stopped about a foot away from me, pushing me around a little bit and had some fun. It seemed kind of affectionate, like a dog that's happy to see you. I never felt threatened. It was an amazing, unbelievable experience. I don't know for sure what it was thinking, but it's something that I will always remember. So that's the gift of fearlessness. So I'll end here, and I will invite any questions, comments, sharing. Hiya.
And if you would speak to the, when I think of Dhamma also, I think about receiving, how that is also generosity, and it's something that at least I've been working on in terms of allowing others to give to me. I think also, I don't know if the Dharma talks that way at all, but I think that allowing somebody to give to you is allowing them that opportunity of clearing their mind for generosity. Because so often we go, oh no, don't. You know,
right.
Or our culture tells us that
we should do that. Right. You know, I can't speak to where it is in the teachings. Probably if I Googled it on Access to Insight, I might find it. But certainly that is a piece of that. So, you know, I heard someone who used to be a monk talk about how he would, when he was on alms round in Thailand or somewhere, he would get kind of caught up in, you know, I'm not worthy, blah, blah, blah. And it got in the way of his receiving. And then he realized that it was given, that this was part of the Dhamma, that his receiving that was part of the process, his opening his heart to that, and that these the people that were giving to him because because that was their practice, not so much as him as a person, you know. So, and he was denying them that by getting caught up in his own stuff about it. So, yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you.
This is actually a story about my greed. And in my defense, I will say that I was very young and naive about the Buddhist teachings. But my first path was Tibetan Buddhism, and I went to a retreat. And it was a, you know, probably as many people as are here, much like this, is sitting probably where I'm sitting. And I noticed that this beautiful tray of malas was being passed around. And I made the very intelligent observation that those that did not have a mala took a mala. So when the tray came to me, I thought, what a generous community this is to be that giving of a mala to, you know, a new person. And I took my mala and I put it on. And then after the Dharma talk and the sit, I went to the restroom. And I ran into a woman who was absolutely in panic. And she said, "That's my mala." And I was like mortified that I had, you know, because what had happened is that the tray had passed. They were all up in the front to be blessed by the monk. And I, in my greed, thought, this is for me. And what she said to me is, "I know this is my teaching, and I should give you this mala, but I'm not ready."
Beautiful. Yeah, different from my shawl experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Talk is timely for me. For yesterday, I was turning on one of the streets, just coming out from the freeway, and there was a young gal sitting strategically placed, of course, with a plaid, homeless and with a child. And, you know, and traffic and everything. And I've been thinking about this since then. A lot has come to my stream of thoughts, and it's just like, instantly, I just felt so sad. And I thought, I was kind of in a rush to where I had to go. And I felt like such a dilemma. I was thinking about, Donna, how do I respond to this? And your talk really helped me because I honestly could not have given her money for starters, because that's what she was obviously at least apparently. Because there was, it wasn't a matter of generosity, I just wasn't at the place to give money. In fact, money seemed, at the moment, seemed so garish in its presentation. I mean, it almost seems like, even though it seems like she seems to be going for it. And if anything, I know a little bit about homelessness, and I legally thought about parking the car and walking back and telling where she gets shelter and all that. And I don't think she's looking for it. I think she's looking for money. But, you know, listening to you has really helped me see that within myself, the critical part, I think, is where you're at as a person. That for me, as I think about this, I think the best thing I can give her is just thoughts of loving kindness. Honestly, because it's not so much a money thing as it is not wanting to succumb, I don't want to call it a trap, but succumb to doing something that I'm just not prepared for, and for good reasons, perhaps.
I think you've said it all. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
About 25 years ago, I had this bracelet.
This is confession time.
Sort of retro. And a friend of mine admired it. And so I thought, I should give it to her because that's just the right thing to do. And so I did. And I still remember it. And many times I've both regretted it and I've sort of beaten myself up. Anyway, I understand it a lot better now, and I think maybe now I can forgive myself for still wanting it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So to have some compassion for yourself around the suffering of that.
I'm kind of afraid to ask this question because it's going to show that I don't understand things. The reason to have generosity, or one of the criteria to be generous, I guess, is that it benefits your practice. Mm-hmm. You said that was the highest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how it benefits my practice or how it helps me become enlightened. It's a wonderful thing to do. I enjoy doing it. But can you speak to the mechanisms of where it actually benefits my practice?
Well, the way I understand it is if you think about awakening or nibbana or whatever as a mind that's clear of the defilements, right, or unwholesome mind states, then the practice allows us to more clearly see our mind and to develop a mind that's free of those by, like your bracelet story, you know, or my shawl story or whatever, or the mala story, by seeing the mind. And experiencing what it's like to have the defilements, and not in a judgmental way, but just experiencing that, and then by the seeing of them, it's said, and in my experience, that's true. That you know, they self-liberate. If you really experience what it's like to feel greed, anger, and delusion, and eventually the mind will move in another direction, you know, if you can clearly see it. So that's the way I understand it. Does that answer your question? Okay. And so to experience generosity, you experience also what that feels like. You see the mind that's generous, and the mind naturally inclines that way. So it helps in that inclining process.
Working with this a quote by Jack Kornfield is generosity is confidence in life.
Mm.
And I think it ties into that idea of practice of, I'll just say for myself, living in a Western culture in the 21st century, and it's so physically materially oriented, and kind of the collecting and gathering of things. And I just think that idea of generosity is confidence in life is that life is abundant and will take care of me. Mm. So I might call it faith or trust in life, that I can give in a lot of different ways, and how much do I really need, and what do I really need. And so in that way, I think it can be a practice.
Ah, nice. The unencumbered life. Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to add to that, and since one of my practices is, we've got opportunities to just, you know, because of this abundance that we have, you've got, you know, Craigslist, and you've got Twin City Free Market, you know, in terms of ridding yourself of things that you don't need and wanting people to get those people that need these things. And I found it's really been freeing to use the Twin City Free Market because I could just say, hey, I have this. Mm. Do you need this? You know, whoever does can come and get it. I mean, it's just like, and it's actually helped me instead of putting like some kind of monetary value, let's see, I should have gotten this much money because, God, that really cost me a lot of money. I just think, this stuff. I don't need this stuff anymore. I'm stuck with the stuff is enough. So
cool. That's cool. So I see the children who are naturally generous. So I thank you for your attention. And so let's just take a moment and dedicate our practice to the well-being of all beings. May all beings be free from suffering.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.